I want to apologize to everyone. I had advertised that we had PowerPoint, but after two sessions and one crashed computer, I gave up on it. I think this lends itself to sheets. So I enjoyed it last time, so hopefully it'll work this well this time as well. My father of blessed memory used to say that isn't it interesting to note that the only mitzvah where the Torah says you should be very careful is when it comes to guarding your life. So one of our tasks for tonight is to evaluate to what extent can we say that there is a mitzvah in the Torah to guard your life, and that therefore it's one of the only mitzvahs where it says you should guard your life very, very much. This notion of there being some sort of a mitzvah to guard our lives, what would that apply to? Is it only apply to keeping away from things? Does it apply also to doing certain types of things, like exercising and other things? What of things that are real dangers, perceived dangers, possible dangers? And we'll try to address issues of exercising and smoking and all kinds of different applications. So, Emily, just for your information, I do have one more in case somebody needs one. Okay. All right. Just as a bibliographical reference, there's a wonderful series called L'Reach HaKamocha that has all kinds of discussions of interpersonal and mensch sort of issues. And I should mention that for this series, we drew heavily on this, and they have a whole section on Shmirat HaGuf, of guarding the body. And then they came out with a two-volume set, which is very, very interesting, although it deals a lot with the question of Talmudic dangers. In the Talmud, you'll find there are many things that they said, oh, don't do that, that's very dangerous. And whether that still applies today or not, whether some of them are connected to various ancient superstitions, which perhaps the rabbis were just sort of humoring the crowd with, or whether there was actually things that the Talmud believed, whether nature changed, all the different theories. So this book deals a lot with that. But I want to deal with more fundamental questions. First question is guarding your life, exercising, eating right, are these things, is that a mitzvah like putting on tefillin, keeping Shabbos, eating kosher, not eating not kosher? Is it that much of a mitzvah? Is it really, really a mitzvah or not? So let's look at the first source, which seems to be a good source, and then you tell me if it really is a good source. Who wants to read that from the Talmud in Brachot 32b? Westling? Yes. Mr. Kramer? Would you like to read?
Would you read?
Please.
Okay. Talmud Berachot 32b. Our rabbis taught, there's a story of a pious chassid who was praying on the road. One officer came and offered him greetings of shalom, and he didn't return shalom. He waited for him to finish his prayer. He said to him, "You fool, doesn't it say in your Torah, just guard your life for yourself very much?" And it says, "Guard your life very much. When I offered you shalom, why did you not return to me shalom? If I will cut your head off with a sword, who will demand your blood from me?"
Who is this man who's talking? Who's this officer?
A Gentile.
A Gentile, right, clearly. If it's in the days of the Talmud, it's probably what nationality?
Roman.
So some sort of Roman officer of some sort, Tsar. And he's trying to be friendly, but there was a notion in those days, if you didn't respond shalom to the right officer, you were in big trouble. So, for instance, during the Shema, you're saying the Shema, and someone says hello to you, and they're of great authority, you better respond. For in Shmon Esrei, you have to hope for the best. But if you're in the Shema, you would interrupt. So this rabbi was. He was praying, so he couldn't interrupt. He was in the Shmon Esrei. Who suggests the notion in this story that you're supposed to guard your life very much? Who suggests it?
The guard.
Sorry? The guard. The guard.
Yeah, the Gentile.
The Gentile claims that in our Torah it says you should guard yourself very much. Well, right. So firstly, could we bring this as the source for guarding your life, that you should watch your life? You shouldn't do anything foolish like get in trouble with a Roman angry sword-bearing man, right? That would be a violation of guarding your life. Can we prove from this source that the Torah says, don't do anything dangerous, guard your life very much. Can we prove that from here?
It's a Roman general.
What? But then, all right, what does he know? So it does, it seems to be problematic. But let's look in the Torah. Maybe he's quoting a verse. If he's quoting a simple verse, then he should be right. Right? I don't care who quotes it. If it's a real verse, then it should be true. So let's, who wants to read the Torah source, please? Devarim chapter 4, verse 9. Louise?
Just watch out and guard your life very much, lest you forget the things that your eyes, and lest they depart from your heart.
I'm sorry, I should have said that your eyes saw.
Yeah. Unless they depart from your heart all the days of your life, and you should tell them to your children and to your children's children the day that you stood in front of Hashem and Horeb.
So what should you watch out for? Your spiritual, spiritual what? Sorry?
It seems like it's talking about not your physical life.
Not your physical life, your spiritual life. And what should you guard yourself against?
Forgetting.
Maybe sin. Forgetting what?
Matan Torah.
Forgetting what? For standing in front of Hashem at Chorev. Chorev means a very dry place. Sinai. For standing at Sinai. We should never forget Sinai. Some people say, we'll see in a moment in the Ramban, that this is one of the great commandments in the Torah. And many people say at the end of the Siddur, in the morning after Shachris, there are six things to remember. The Ramban says maybe it's a mitzvah to say this passage every day, or to just talk about Sinai every day. To remember Sinai. You should never forget Sinai. So watch out for your life. Really, maybe you could translate nefesh. The word nefesh can sometimes mean life. Maybe I shouldn't translate watch out and guard your life. Maybe I should say watch out and guard your
soul.
Maybe your soul. Right? Yeah, right? You should love the Lord your God with all of your heart and all of your
soul.
The rabbis interpret in that case that you should love God with all of your soul, meaning even if He takes your soul, even if He takes your life. So there it does mean life. Does it mean life? So, did the Roman guard misquote? Where did the Roman guard get it from? Right? Where did he get this idea that you could use this verse for this? The Roman guard has his own interpretations of the Torah? Right? He quotes two verses, right? What's the second verse? Who would like to read the second verse? Same chapter, verse 15. Who wants to read that? Lestaline?
And should guard your lives very much, for you did not see any image on the day Hashem spoke to your congregation at Sinai.
Okay, so there it's a guarding against what? Hi, Phil Barber, there's two chairs here if you'd like to come. Maybe it'd be more comfortable. It's a little hard to hear back there. There's a problem with the air conditioning.
I think it's a problem with my ears.
Welcome. So the question is there a mitzvah to guard our lives, to guard our health? So we have a Roman quoted in the Talmud who says, don't you people know you're supposed to guard your life? We looked in the verses and it says you should guard your life, that you shouldn't forget what?
Receiving
the Torah Mount Sinai. And the second verse says you should guard your life, v'nishmartem mojon hashoteichem. Very much, me'od, like my father Avosham pointed out, that you realize you should guard yourself to always remember that what? At Mount Sinai, where we learned about God, we didn't
see
an image. Right? This is the key source that God is ethereal and God does not have a physical form. So the Roman in the passage in the Talmud claimed that this verse, guard your life, it dictates that what? You shouldn't bring yourself into harm's way. But the text itself seems to say that you should guard what?
Your soul,
your spiritual life, by making sure that you have the two beliefs. Number one, that we got the Torah at Sinai, and that God has no form. So we don't really have a verse. We have a Roman who quoted the verse about guarding your life, but the verse itself doesn't seem to support it. Yes?
But couldn't you then say, you know, and you should tell to your children and to your children's children
mm-hmm.
that we need to guard our life so that we're there to tell our children and our children's children. Hmm.
Good. Good. There's a Jewish mandate to live. There are two mandates to live. There's a mandate to live as human beings, and there's a mandate to live as Jews, because we have to perpetuate our community and teach, right? The a priori assumption of teaching our children is that we have children, that we have the next generations. We continue to live. It's true. Yes?
Also, isn't there's three things that you're not supposed to...
Go ahead.
You're supposed to...
Give your life rather than do three things.
But those three things are the only time you ever give your life.
Okay, good.
Life is important.
Right. So we're gonna see that in a moment, that there's another source that says that's on the second other side of the page, on the back side of the page. It says v'chai b'hem. You see, it's a transliteration about 10 lines down. It says v'chai b'hem. The Torah says you should live by them. The rabbis interpret that you should not
die by them.
Not that you should die by them. You don't die by the Torah, you live by the Torah. So other than idolatry, immorality, and killing, we do not die by the Torah, we only live by the Torah. So that seems to indicate that it's a mitzvah to live. To live, but would that indicate that you have to exercise or eat right? Maybe. It's not so clear.
You would shorten your life by not doing those things.
Yeah, that, although that verse is talking about living through the Torah. That, in other words, the Torah shouldn't be a source of death, it should be a source of life. But yes, we did bring it here, and you brought it appropriately. That could be another source as well. Now, the notion that Romans may have the right interpretation of the Torah is not so outlandish. If we take one Roman-like man that we happen to know a little bit about, namely Josephus, right? Was he Roman? He was Jewish. But he joined the enemy, and he became sort of Roman. And he writes this book about the Jews, and he tells our history, and goes over the Torah. And in the Torah, he says, for instance, that the chalitza ceremony was performed, that the spitting at the husband who rejects the wife in the story of Ruth, that the other husband actually rejected Ruth, and he took off his shoe, and they went through that ceremony as outlined in Deuteronomy, the story of Ruth. They did the same thing. Now, that doesn't say that in the book of Ruth. So some people say, you know what Josephus was? He was a man on the street. He was a Jewish general. He didn't know that much. He knew what most people knew. He knew the Bible. And he knew certain Jewish interpretations. Here and there he picked up a midrash, here or there. Sometimes he makes up his own things. So we could say that this Roman, obviously his Roman is a fairly nice Roman. He could have killed this Jewish rabbi and he didn't. And he also may have picked up on the street that Jews say that they have a verse that says, guard your life very much. And although it doesn't, in its simple sense, it does not mean protect your life. It means guard your soul. But in the rabbinic sense, the Jewish sense, the man on the street sense, perhaps it means something apropos to what we're talking about, a mitzvah to protect your life and not to put yourself in danger. So we can't take it too lightly. Now we go on. Okay. Any other questions on this? Yes. Okay. The fact that the Talmud allows a Gentile to quote a verse with a sort of a twist on it, an interpretation of a verse, without sort of refuting it, right? Perhaps opens the door to its veracity, to its being a proper interpretation.
What's
could be.
Before and after this?
A good question. Let's see, 32. I don't know offhand. I'm not sure offhand. That's a good question. I have to double check. Assume it's in the section about asking hello, but I'm not sure about that. Yes.
I'm just going to say, just in general, is there anything in the Talmud? I mean, just anything in the Torah about showing respect to Hashem, just in general, because you know Hashem created me.
Could you speak up a little bit? Yeah.
In general, it's respectful to Hashem to take care of something that he created.
Yes.
Just in general. I don't know when in the Torah and then say that specifically.
Good.
Just in general, it just seems that Hashem created us and created our body and our soul. And it just, if Hashem created us, it just seems like it's respectful to Hashem for me to be respected for my body.
We've spoken in other weeks in the Mensch Institute of the notion that you want to, that when we ask, why is it mandated to be kind and nice to others and not speak harshly to others? Part of it stems from the fact that they are created in the image of God, that it's a disrespect against God to disrespect his creatures. Certainly it should apply to ourselves as well. That the disrespect to ourselves is the same disrespect to God and his creation. That's true. The only thing is there could be a countervailing idea, and that would be that we could argue that if God made me sick, then I should, then, you know, there's that Jewish science idea, you know, that if God made me sick, maybe I should stay that way. You know, you could argue that. So then we need another verse to say, no, you should heal yourself. Rapo yirape, you have a right to be a doctor, you have a right to heal, you have maybe a mitzvah to heal ourselves. We have a right to try to overcome adversity and sickness that's thrown at us. Yes?
Also, not becoming sick and, you know, what have the sickness already, trying to get rid of it is different. You're saying that we should respect ourselves, right?
You
can't make yourself sick. And
right.
It's a different thing to make yourself sick than to get yourself unsick.
Right, so there could be a mitzvah to heal, but who says there's a mitzvah to preserve? Right. Maybe if I eat potato chips all day and I fall apart, so that's right. The question is that tantamount to doing harm to myself, in which case just like I can't do harm to others, I can't do harm to myself.
I mean, one of the things is it's very difficult for there to be very specific mitzvahs with respect to our health like this. You know, we can't have a specific mitzvah like it's a mitzvah to go to the gym and do this specific exercise for this specific length of time.
Right.
It's very difficult.
Okay.
So it's more vague. It's not clear cut.
I'll go a step further. David says, maybe, what do we expect? We expect the Torah to say, thou shalt exercise, thou shalt eat healthy foods. As a matter of fact, one might argue, Rabbi David Blech argues this, that the Torah doesn't talk about things that are obvious. Right? The Torah says, or when it does, we don't pay that much attention to it because it's obvious. So, for instance, it says in the Torah, you should eat, and you should be satiated, and you should bless God. What's a mitzvah?
To bless God.
What about eating? It says, the same verse, it says eat. So the answer is that things we already know that we do anyway, the Torah is not here to tell us the things we would do anyway. That's not a mitzvah. That's something we obviously have to do. All right, our mothers will tell us that it's a mitzvah to eat. But the Torah is not mandating it. It's just beyond the obvious. So it could be that's the truth. And then we have to understand the notion of asmachta, the notion that some things, although not said, some things are true, and the rabbis find a hook in the Torah to latch it onto, but the truth is, it's part of the spirit of the Torah, and it's not really, it doesn't really say it anywhere. But the rabbis try to find verses that you could latch it onto, and this could be what's going on here. Okay, let's continue. Talmud in Menachot, who would like to read that? Mindy?
One who forgets one thing from his teaching violates the prohibition, as it says, watch your life.
Same verse. Talmud quotes the same verse, actually, to say that it's that you shouldn't forget things. In other words, we shouldn't be so neglectful of our Torah studies that we forget everything. If you want to take this more strictly, you should constantly be reviewing everything you're doing, everything you know. So, again, the rabbis in Menachot, in this particular Talmudic passage, take the verse, watch your life, guard your life. Do they take it to mean guard your physical life? No. So we have another challenge to the notion that there's a mitzvah in the Torah called guard your life. Okay. And finally, another challenge, the mitzvot that the Rambam forgot to count in the 613 mitzvot, according to the Ramban. You see, the Rambam, Reb Sadia Gaon, and certain rabbis tried to figure out what did the Talmud mean when it said there were 613 commandments. So they went through the whole Torah. The Rambam actually had 13 principles on which he decided what was a mitzvah and what wasn't. And the Ramban says, you know, it's a very nice list, but there are certain things you missed. You made a mistake on a few of them. And he disagrees with some of the mitzvahs that the Rambam counts or doesn't count. He says, you forgot to count that we were commanded not forget to stand at Sinai, the standing at Sinai, what's a better word? The Ma'amad Har Sinai, the episode of Sinai. So again, he takes that verse of watch out and guard your soul, should guard your soul not to forget Sinai. So he takes that as a mitzvah. You know, if we want to preserve the idea that there's a mitzvah to guard your life, we'd have to say that that one verse contains two separate ideas. Okay. So far, how's the theory doing of what I call my father's idea, that there's a mitzvah in the Torah that says guard your life very much, and it means you should protect your life. How's it doing?
Not so hot.
Not so hot. Okay. Not so hot. Now we go to the Rambam. Who would like to read that for us? In the laws of the murderer and guarding of life. Now, he has a section, right? He made up his own sections. In the Torah, in the Talmud, there's no section called laws of murderer and guarding life. He made up his own categorizations of how you divide the Torah in 14 different books, not six, and not five. And he has a section called the laws of murderer and guarding your life. So in other words, he thought that there was a whole category of there's don't murder, and there's also another category of guarding life, and they belong together in the same section. So for instance, he puts in there, look, included in these laws are, right? If someone kills someone by mistake, we know what's going to happen to him in the Middle East, right? Go to Libya, you'll find out, right? Right? And so you got to give him a city of refuge. You got to protect his life. Right? If someone is being pursued, right? Someone's running after someone with a gun, you take another gun and you shoot the guy who's chasing him. So, or you shoot him yourself if you're being chased. You save your life. Guarding of life. Don't stand idly by the blood of your neighbor. If someone's drowning, you can't just say, well, I'm not really much of a lifeguard and I feel like it and I don't want to get wet. You have a good Samaritan law and you must do something and not to mislead others and to help other people with their burden. Someone's walking with something that's too heavy. He puts this all in one section as if to say the law of do not kill includes
yourself.
Do yourself. And also, it means don't kill others means we have a mitzvah to
help to
protect people's lives.
Sure.
Protect lives, including perhaps your own. So, not surprisingly, sorry?
If you're going to protect someone else's, you should protect your own.
Right, so, one time we were learning about, you know, two people are fighting over a garment, and my teacher in Gush Etzion, Rav Meidan, he said, wait, this is all this fancy Talmudic stuff and Bava Metzia. It's just from the simple law, do not steal. Do not steal. We're talking about who gets the cloak that's being fought over? Who gets the boat that's being fought over? What does that have to do with do not steal? He says, no. Do not steal says that you can't steal. That means that people have private property. Right? So too, apropos what David was saying, that, you know, the idea of saving your life is obvious. It's inherent in the Ten Commandments of do not murder means that we should guard life. Okay, good. But to be more specific, the Rambam gets into our topic of guarding your life. Who would like to read that?
From where you stopped.
We're in chapter 11, law 1, 4, 5, around there. It is a positive. Who would like to read that?
Go ahead.
No. Yes.
It is a positive command to make a fence on his roof. Whether it is your roof or something else that has danger and is worthy to watch out for, the person may die, may trip and die.
So it's good to know this, that if you have a high ledge or something in your house, and not a roof like most of the slanted roofs. We have a flat roof and people go up there to sunbathe or something like that. You should have a parapet. You should have a wall around it so that it should be like a good mechitza about 40 inches tall so people won't fall off. So it's good to know. But he says, or something else that has a danger, right? Something else you should watch out for. You may trip. Go ahead.
And so any obstacle which has a danger to life is a positive mitzvah to remove it and to guard from it. Very much,
right? Very much. Well, where did he get that from? Perhaps one of our verses. Go ahead.
As it says, guard your life.
There it is. That's our verse shows up in the Rambam, right? As guarding your life. Now, according to the Talmudic passages, don't really say that. But he brought it back. Maybe from the Gemara and Brachot, maybe from the Roman. Guarding your life means watch out for dangerous stuff. Okay, continue.
And if he did not remove it, and he left the obstacles which lead to danger, he annulled a positive commandment and violated, do not place blood in your house.
Torah says in Deuteronomy that you should, when you make a house, you should put a fence on the roof, and you should not put blood in your house. If you don't put a fence up there, someone's going to fall off and get all bloodied, and you'll be responsible for it. So there's the positive commandment to guard your life, and the negative commandment not to hurt others, not to kill others. Okay. Not to cause the death of others. Okay. So let me ask you, based on this, would smoking be a violation?
Absolutely not.
Perhaps. Perhaps, right? Perhaps.
Well, not just because you're not guarding your own,
you're being others, right.
Depending on the science that you believe at the moment.
Yes.
Well, you know, secondhand smoke, I mean, that's modern science that is refuted by other science, you know, so...
Secondhand smoke.
So, how would you know which...
Well, we have a doctor here. Any comments on that?
It's clearly harmful. There's no question about it. So, yes, I think it would be a violation, even more so than... Because it's a violation of... If you have something on your house and you're mandated to do it and you don't do it, you are violating a positive command. If you are aggressively smoking, you are instead inflicting, maybe not on purpose, but inflicting with knowledge harm. So I think it even goes further when you look at it from that side. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right. One is actual, right. One is an omission. You fail, right? You fail to put up a fence. Maybe someone would come up there. Maybe they wouldn't. And here, if you're in proximity of others, then you could be attacking others, right? But we still haven't proven, right? Would this mitzvah, right? So you all made a good point. What about you smoking and harming yourself? Is that relevant to this? That's
you're not guarding your life.
Well, yeah. Well, that's the question. What's he throwing this verse in here? He should have just said it's an extension of making a parapet. The Torah is not talking about parapets. The Torah is not interested in roofs. We're only interested in roofs. That's what it says in the Torah. No, the Torah is setting a principle that you shouldn't set up dangerous things that are going to harm other people. But in terms of yourself, you haven't proven that. Although, you're right, the verse that he chooses, which we're not sure where he got it from, the Rambam cannot interpret his own verses with any authority. Only the Talmud and the Midrash have the authority to determine what the official Midrash of a verse. But somehow he throws that verse in there from somewhere. Some people think maybe he may have a hidden source, may have a Midrash that we're not aware of. Maybe he's using this Talmud in Brachot. That verse does seem to indicate that you should guard your own life. Okay. All right. Let's continue. So until now, if a person smokes in a closed car with someone else, then what is that? Is it a violation of a Torah verse? Yes. Now we turn to the next paragraph. Esther?
Many things the sages forbid, for they have danger to life, and anyone who violated them, who said, I will endanger myself, and what do others care? Or I do care about this.
Do not care about this.
Or I do not care about this, and we give him rabbinic lashes, and these are they. Do not put your mouth on other
clothes. Right, this was revolutionary. Didn't the Middle Ages, wasn't the Black Plague caused by people just having no regard for germs and things like that? Right. Even in the Civil War, they cut people's limbs off without washing in between. Right, but the rabbis knew that you shouldn't drink from the public hose. Not a good idea. Now, There's a problem in this passage. What's the problem? Okay, right. All of a sudden he throws in endangering your own life, right? And it sounds like he's basically saying, If you want to endanger life, you're basically what?
It's okay. No.
I mean, that's what he's saying.
No, we give him rabbinic lashes. If he's,
because he's saying you're not alone. When you hurt yourself, it's not as if you're not going to hurt anyone else. Right? If I endanger myself, what do others care?
No. If you put your mouth, no, it's not about other people.
Oh, the
mouth on the public.
Yeah.
Oh, you endanger yourself and the other person.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I didn't know
that was the
first.
Now, what's the contradiction? There's a contradiction here. As usual, the Rambam contradicts himself. He can't, somehow, he's very good at that. What's the contradiction? Yes. No, if he says that, we give him lashes.
We give him lashes.
Rabbinic lashes.
That's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Rabbinic lashes.
So obviously we care.
Right.
And so therefore it's a mitzvah to take care of yourself.
Right. So we're definitely the mitzvah of, as far as yes.
But it seems like it's coming from the...
Okay, so slow down. You gave an answer and then you had a question on yourself. That's right. So so Mindy says, the contradiction is that the first paragraph said, oh yeah, if you do something dangerous and it affects others, you have violated the Torah. What? Two verses. Number one, guard your life. Number two, place blood in your house. Then he says, oh yeah, sure, this is very important. And as a matter of fact, the rabbis told you can't do a lot of things. If you do any of those things, you get lashes for violating rabbinic violation.
But that makes it rabbinic, not Torah.
Right.
The rabbinic lashes are the punishment. The Torah apparently doesn't give a punishment, so the rabbis institute.
No, but if you violate a commandment, if you violate, do not play, if you violate a commandment in the Torah, you get lashes for the Torah. Under certain circumstances, you would get lashes if you were warned, etc. Under certain circumstances, you're theoretically liable for getting lashes, punishment for that violation. But if you violate a rabbinic violation, you get rabbinic lashes. So first we said it was a serious thing, and all of a sudden he says it's a rabbinic issue. So Mindy gave an answer. Okay, so well, I don't have the whole list here. We have to look it up again. But let's take that example of the public hose. What's the difference between something that has a danger someone may trip and die from, and a public hose?
Tripping and dying is a more immediate possibility, whereas the spread of germs is a little bit slower than crashing down to your desk.
If you don't wash your hands after leaving the hospital room or something, right?
Yeah.
So that's a bad idea, not to wash your hands when you came in contact with someone who has whatever disease. But you can't say it's a Torah violation. But if you, what? I don't know. Walk in with a flu and you touch everything in the hospital bed of someone who has pneumonia. Yeah. What? Sorry? Right. That would be the violation. So, depends that there's different levels here of safek sakana. When you think you might maybe be putting someone in some danger, that's a rabbinic violation. And when you have set up a situation someone definitely could be endangered, although they may not be there right now. The person is not there right now. But he may, if he's up there, he really could fall. Then that is a Torah violation. But in any event, yes.
So where did we put smoking?
Okay, good. Good.
Did that
okay.
become a rabbinic violation at that point?
Good question. Right. So what do you think?
Well, if these are the things we have to go by, then mm-hmm. smoking around someone else with the possibility that it might cause them harm mm-hmm. becomes rabbinic. But I guess if you put the cigarette out on them, it would be
right.
Or if you leave it burning,
if you leave it burning.
Let's say that you fell asleep.
Yeah, and that way you would cause a fire, yeah.
Right, that would be the Torah.
Perhaps the Torah violation.
Smoking in bed.
Smoking in bed.
Torah violation.
Let's see. So this may depend on the degree of certitude with which doctors will speak about it, to what extent you put it in the first paragraph or second. Right. Right. So we'll get to some very specific sources about smoking later. But it's a good question. Where does smoking belong, in the first paragraph or the second? Is it a Torah violation or would it be a rabbinic violation? What about eating too many high-fat foods?
Unless you've already been told by the doctor that it's, you know, one more French fry and you're going to the hospital.
But you may trip and die. But, right. Yeah, I don't think we have a clear definition here of the difference between you put your mouth in the public hose, you might die, you might not, maybe you get lucky that day. You put, someone goes on your roof and there's nothing there. He might fall off, he might not fall off. So I'm not. There are rabbis who mention Mendy's solution. I'm not sure exactly how to define the difference, but it's a problem. Yes?
So I have two things to say. One is the fact that I'm assuming the sages here mean the Sanhedrin?
The sages could mean anybody in the Talmud. It happens to be a Talmud passage in the Avodah Zarah and other places that mentioned that he mentioned the Baba Kama here also. Yeah?
Torah commandments
right.
of
life.
They don't legislate for no reason. So there must be something that they're basing themselves on.
Oh, well, the rabbis may have expanded. They do sometimes expand the Torah
right.
laws.
But there must be something that they are getting
from. Right. They didn't say, well, this is not within our realm. We're not going to talk about public hoses. That's for the public health minister. We're in the religion department, right? Obviously, somehow they felt it is relevant and it's based on something. So there must be some spirit of the Torah. There must be some verse, some place, some hat to some hook to hang their head on. That for this type of violation, that's true. Good point. Yes.
This is my question. I mean, as with smoking, you know, it's addictive and all that. To what extent does the free will of the person, if a person's addicted to it? You know, I have a bad habit of eating a lot of salami.
Okay.
Sometimes I feel that I don't have any free will.
We're going to get to that. Would a rabbi give someone a pass and say, well, you cannot start smoking. It's a terrible thing. But you already did. So we're going to see people who we're going to think in that direction. Okay. Now, so look in the Talmudic passage. Talmud of Baba Kama. Rabbi Natan says, right, one of my favorite names, how do we know you should not raise a bad dog in your home and not put a shaky ladder in your house, right? A bad dog, meaning a dog that you can't control and that kind of thing. You shouldn't have one. Shaky ladder, they usually had two stories. Shaky ladder could lead to big problems. Teach, do not put blood in your house. Now, so it's strange. They don't use the verse of what? Guard your life. No, right. So when is it guard your life? And when is it put blood in your house?
Guard your life is when it's more about yourself and
okay.
Put blood in your house is when
for
it's
others.
More about
good. Life. Any other ideas? Yes.
Maybe do not put blood in your house for something that can cause harm, and guard your life is something to promote well being.
Guard could be. Maybe eating healthy things, right? Where's our mitzvah to eat healthy things, right? That's a different, we didn't ask that question yet. Good. What else?
This also seems to be specifically for things that are in your physical realm that you're in control over. Both of those things are physically in your house.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily saying, like, make sure the traffic lights in your city work.
Mm-hmm. Right, things that you're responsible for.
Whereas the public code.
Yeah. What about, so someone made a distinction. One of the rabbis made a distinction between things that are life-threatening and just dangerous. The things that you might get hurt. Which verse, guard your life or do not put blood in your house, which one is life-threatening?
Blood.
Probably blood, yeah. Probably blood. Guard your life, although life means life, is your whole life. But it could be to guard your life, especially because some of you have pointed out the guarding sounds like you're going one step further, just to sort of watch out for things. Maybe that's just to watch out for any harm, right? I don't know, it won't be good for your blood pressure. You know, certain things, it's not going to kill you, but it's not good.
Shouldn't have had those eggs.
Right, right, right. But, and the other one, things that could lead you to God forbid, to death. Okay. So we talked about the Rambam. Yeah, the Rambam. Some see a difference between the Rambam and this passage in the Talmud. And we talked a little bit about the difference between these two prohibitions. Okay. So now, bottom line, how did the different rabbis of the ages, did they see guarding your life as a Torah violation or a rabbinic violation? And by the way, when we say Torah violation, we have two different verses, if not three or four. Right? It could be a violation of, if not guarding your life might be a violation of perhaps
blood in your home,
or is it a violation of guarding your life? But in any event, whatever it is it a Torah law? So we have the Sma, one of the commentaries on the Code of Jewish Law. He says they're all Torah laws. The whole thing's Torah laws. Forget about the Rambam. It's all Torah laws. And the Levush or Mordechai Yaffe, both from about 400 years ago, they said no. Second rabbi says the rabbi's connected it to a verse. It's not really a Torah violation. The rabbi's connected to a verse. It's a nice idea. It's important. The rabbi, it's a rabbinic value. It's a Torah value. It stems perhaps from, it's underlying many of the Torah concepts, but there's no specific violation of anything. It's a rabbinic idea. No doubt, as Mindy said, rabbinic ideas are all based on the spirit of the Torah, Ruach HaTorah, but it's not really a specific violation you could pinpoint. Now, we mentioned this question, can you distinguish between different types of dangers? We mentioned that. What's the difference between guard your life and make a roof around your a fence around your roof? We talked about that. Okay. Now we might be able to understand a rabbinic statement that they make in different places, that danger laws are more severe than prohibitions. That if you have to choose between, in the olden days, they had very dangerous salt. They would use salt that came from the Dead Sea. And some of it was mixed in with sulfur and other lovely things that could ruin your eyes. We know when you touch the Dead Sea salt, your eyes, it's... So the salt was dangerous. So they said, wash your hands at the end of the meal. Otherwise, you might touch your eyes. You'll ruin your eyes. You won't be able to see anymore. So the rabbi said, that's an obligation. During the meal, you know, it's not nice. If your hands are all dirty, you should really wash your hands. But that's a real obligation. So chamira sakanta meisura, laws relating to danger are more important there, more severe than regular prohibitions. What would be the basis of that? How do we know?
Guard your life.
So why is guard your life more important than another mitzvah? It says, I don't know, be holy, so you should wash your hands a lot. I don't know. Why is it more important than other mitzvahs? Why?
Because if you don't have your life, you can't do any mitzvahs.
Okay, that's the next idea. Okay, what else?
You can't teach your children.
Yeah. Okay. But go back to my father, Elvis Holmes, his idea, right? That what?
It says very much.
It says very much. As my father pointed out, it's one of the few laws where it says you should guard your life very much. Why not? Why very much? You know, anything the Torah tells you to do, it's important, so you don't have to say very much. It says ma'od twice, actually. Very, very much. Very much. Yes.
Yeah, I'd
have to look into the exact context in which the rabbi said these, because it was the same question again. I think sometimes if we're in doubt, we say, well, I'm probably not violating the violation, you know, we're going to be okay. But they say, oh, but this is danger. When it comes to danger, then, for instance, percentage-wise. In other words, if you say, well, that's it. My wife is expecting a baby. Let's get in the car. It's Shabbos. We've got to run to the hospital. We've got to get in the hospital. Get in the car on Shabbos. Really? Probably we could walk, you know. We walk. Probably she won't give birth, you know. And, you know, and, right. And so-and-so falls on Shabbos. And, you know, all right, he's 90 years old and he broke something. But, you know, probably if we wait till after Shabbos, it'll be okay. So we say that, that when it comes to sakana, even a suffix, if there's a possibility that maybe you're going to permanently lose a limb or an eye or a limb, then so the level of doubt becomes greater, the level to which you have to be careful about things. So that it may have, that may be part of what this is about. Then we mentioned the idea, as Esalen said, that we want to live by the Torah. There's a mandate to live, so that would be perhaps be connected to this idea of guarding our lives. Others quote another verse. Who would like to read that there? And I will demand. And who can figure out where that's from? No. No, this is new. So ahead. Go ahead.
And I will demand the blood of your souls. The Talmud, BK, a prohibition for causing oneself harm.
You know where that's from? Dimchem anashotichem edrosh. It's in the seven laws of Noah. Seven laws of Noah. Or it's in the laws after the boat comes down and they go out into the earth, and God talks to Noah about his covenant, and he says that if someone kills somebody, I'm gonna demand the blood of your souls. So the rabbis say, I'm gonna demand your blood for your souls. You can't cause yourself harm either. It's a prohibition of suicide, but even harm. If you chovel ba'atzmo, why can't I hit my? I'll hit myself. I'll cause a little black and blue mark. That is a violation of the Torah to cause yourself harm. So in terms of guarding our lives, certainly, in terms of maybe smoking, eating unhealthy foods, perhaps that's a violation of causing oneself harm. Okay. Now we get down to an actual case of guarding life, smoking. So it's interesting. I have a response here from Rabbi Feinstein from 64. Rabbi Menashe Klein, the Yibar Lachaim, I believe he's still alive, in Brooklyn somewhere, 1980. And the Tzitz Eliezer, I think he's also still alive. He's like a million years old or something. They're both very old. If he's not alive, he was alive until very recently. 1982, I think he just passed away. So you'll see how things change a little bit. Let's take a look at Rabbi Feinstein. Who'd like to read that for us?
As a smoker.
You don't have to admit it. Okay.
Since there's suspicion of getting sick from it, it is fitting to avoid it, but to say that it's forbidden from the prohibition of danger...
Danger, right? We mentioned that danger is more important, more severe than prohibition, so you call it sakana. It's danger. Go ahead.
Since many trample on it, we already learned...
Many trample on it. I mean, many people do it. No one seems to care about it too much. Go ahead.
We already learned in the Gemara in Shabbos that God watches over the fools.
Okay, that's a verse in the Psalms that God watches over. So if everybody does it, God watches over the fools. The example my teacher gave for this is skiing. Right? We know that many people who go skiing land out, broken limbs, broken. Right? We know that many motorcycles land out dead. But, a lot of people, what is it called? Harding, whatever it's called. Hang gliding. We know these things are, people do it and, everybody does it and, So you can't, God watches over people and, go ahead.
And especially since many Torah greats from previous generations.
Torah scholars who are really big, they're called Torah greats, the Gedolim. Go ahead.
Are smoke. So even to those who are strict to fear danger.
Even those who say, well, it's a danger, you better not do it. So then, go ahead.
There is no prohibition to lend a match or a flame to one who smokes.
If then we take today's lesson very seriously, then if someone says, can I have a light? What do you say? No, I'm going to give you a light. But he says, no, don't take it that seriously. Because, a lot of people, a lot of fools out there, everyone, they get away with it. People go skiing and everyone has a story of a grandfather who smoked till he was dead, until he was a million years, till he was 95 years old, and he broke all the rules, but he
still ran a marathon.
Yeah, right. So that's Rabbi Feinstein's attitude in 1964. Okay, the smoking, but the boxes did not say Surgeon General warning, if I'm not mistaken. And is that right?
No.
I don't think so. Right.
Weren't you allowed to smoke in stores?
Oh, yeah, everywhere. Yeah. Yeah.
You could smoke in the hospital then.
Yeah.
You smoke. Okay. Moving along. Mishana halachas. Rabbi Menashe Klein. That much about Chassid. He's a Hasidic Rebbe. A big halachic authority. I've heard his name many times around. And he has a lot of tshuvas, a lot of responsa about this question. By the way, I didn't have a chance to check Rabbi Frank Greenblatt. He also has a big tshuva forbidding smoking as well. Let's continue. 1980. Go ahead. Who wants to read that for us? Okay, Mindy.
Is it considered committing suicide?
Okay.
He is included among those damaging his body. And this is the language of the Ravid, Pradin's 12th century, and Shah HaKadusha.
The Ravid was a halachic authority of major, major proportions. And he was also wrote a pietistic book about holiness and stuff like that. Go ahead.
Certainly a person should keep himself from foods that he knows are damaging him. For one who eats that which hurts him, and he could eat something else, he is a sinner against his body and his soul, for he is going after his desires and is not concerned about the loss of his body. And this is the way of the evil inclination, to take him away from the path of life and to take him from the path of death.
So he claims, you know, today he says, eat the extra piece of kugel and eat this and eat that. And tomorrow he tells you to do something else. And it's the same path. Now, this is a pietistic book. He was a pietistic person. He was a person who claimed to have had some Holy Spirit of sorts. And so he's saying that you shouldn't eat anything that not only hurts you, but what? Just because you feel like eating. Just because you desire it. Right? And what does he say? For he's going after his desires, not concerned about the loss of his body. One second. He eats that which...
And he knows it's damaging.
Yeah, all right, we'll get to something more severe about eating later. So we're going to get back to eating later. But there is this passage of the Ravid, very important authority. He's right up there with Maimonides as a great scholar. So what is he saying? It's even foods. We have to avoid damaging food. So certainly smoking is not even a food, so you can't even argue that it's, you know, for your sustenance. Go ahead.
And therefore, one who cannot do without it, and it will hurt his nerves, then it is not forbidden.
Okay, he gives a pass. He says, well, you know, he's addicted. Right. So he didn't want to go that far. Go ahead.
But for one who is not addicted, he is forbidden to get used to it.
There's the addiction question you mentioned before. Go ahead. So two different ideas. One is he knows that people who are smoking, they think it's very cool, right? It's kind of lost its allure now. And I'm not among teenagers, I'm sure. Sorry, except for some people. But right, it certainly had, right, all the movie stars and everything, all the movies had it, right? Right, so that was one thing. So he opposed it on that basis. He is a Hasidic Rebbe. And then Baal Tashkit, the waste of money, he says, well, you spend a dollar. And he said, you spend a dollar, right? How much is it now? Unbelievable.
$5.
$5.
New York is like $9.
Oh. It's unbelievable. Really?
More than that in New York.
Right.
It's almost $15 back.
Right. It's unbelievable. And then think about people, right, the people who are buying those. And what?
So then, if that's possibly for smoking, what about like alcohol or drugs?
Oh, yeah, right. Drugs, there's very severe tshuvot against drugs.
But what if you're addicted to alcohol?
Ah, I see what you mean. Right.
Does that mean that, then, that you're forbidden from it?
He's throwing in the nerves article, news argument, which is, you know, right. Right. And clearly, we would say go to a, what do you call it? Censor, yeah. But... Yeah, I don't know. Take it with a grain of salt. He's sort of, it's 1980. But it's a good question. I think he felt like it had medicinal purposes for that person. It's a stretched argument. We'll see in a minute that the next rabbi is going to reject this type of approach. Anyone want to defend Rabbi Klein on that one? Okay, so now let's. Okay, go ahead. Who was reading? Was it Emily? Mindy, could you finish?
When the damage is clear, we can't say God watches over the fool.
When the damage is clear, yeah. Right, so Bari Hazeka or Shchicha Hazeka, where clearly the damage is going to take place, then you can't say God watches over the fools. I watch over the fools, because we see that God seems to watch over the fools. That everyone, they seem to hang glide, and they seem to do fine. But
not necessarily the same thing.
Go ahead. Why not?
I don't know if I hang gliding specifically, but you know, for now, every single puff that you take of smoke is harming you. Whether or not it's going to kill you, only one. But it's like skiing, either you will fall or you won't fall.
It's a little bit reversible, though, isn't it? Is it somewhat reversible?
Certainly.
You can undo it by quitting. Yeah.
Just with skiing and hang gliding, we can't say whether it's dangerous or not. It depends how we go on it. I mean, there's ways to ski safely and ways to ski recklessly. Mm-hmm. Certainly, skiing recklessly would seem to me to be a violation.
You'd be driving recklessly, right? The modern problem is texting. Texting while driving. It's a big one. Right. Causes danger. Right. I know it's hard to slow down. It's hard to not do things when you're. All right, Tzitz Eliezer. This is Eliezer Waldenberg. He didn't quite have the status of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Vadi Yosef. He didn't quite have that status, but he was very big. He advised a lot of hospitals in Israel, including Shari Tzedek, I think, of how to run their hospitals on Shabbos and things like that. He's a very, very major authority. Someone told me recently they bumped into him somewhere in a sukkah or something. But in any event, who would like to read that for us? If we're running out of time.
What he wrote, and in light of this, it seems clear without a shadow of a doubt that there is no place to be complacent, that since many have trampled this, it is permitted, for they do not say this unless the facts don't say otherwise. And on the contrary, they saw that many trampled on this and were not hurt. But here, where the consciousness of this already is widespread, so much so that many countries require warnings on the labels, and I read that 100,000 Americans will die because they smoke.
On that year.
Yeah, then surely it is absurd to ignore this and say that God watches the fools. One should forbid smoking as a Torah law.
Yes, he takes it pretty seriously, and that's... Yes, and there are That's a general view. Unfortunately, strangely enough, in some yeshivas, it's like the one vice. You know, they don't do drugs, they don't do anything else. You know? But it's smoke. So it has.
Half of Israel smoke.
Then Israel, it's a big problem. The army, everyone picks up smoking in the army. Okay, you're on guard duty. Go to the top of that hill and do guard duty for the rest of the night, and don't fall asleep. So take a pack of cigarettes. I don't know. Anyway, so it's a big...
Coffee is dangerous, all that caffeine.
Yeah,
much caffeine will cause hypertension, high blood pressure. So there should be a Torah law against that.
I thought caffeine was actually good for you in some cases.
Well, anyway, now I want to point out something. Now, if we ask, is guarding our life a mitzvah like mitzvah of tefillin? So I think we do need to distinguish one level. It may be, according to some authorities, and Tzitz Eliezer seems to go in that direction, that guarding your life at a certain level could be a Torah law. In that sense, it's the same level as other laws. But it is a very basic law, as David mentioned. In other words, it may be a mitzvah, but it's not a mitzvah. Right? If I work out all day at the JCC, I can't say that I'm doing a mitzvah that's beyond the simple preservation of life. In other words, most of the mitzvahs are to take us beyond the preservation of life, to do something with our lives. So this mitzvah may be a very basic, fundamental one, to that life should go on. If life goes on, you can have mitzvahs, once you have life, a lot of things can happen. But I would argue that it's a mitzvah that only brings us to stage one, namely existence. And then we have to go on from there. But finally... I don't know if it's finally, but it's kind of a bigger topic than we have for this hour, but overeating. Okay, let's just take a quick look at overeating. Who wants to read all the passages about overeating? Someone, please. Esther, would you?
One should only eat when he is hungry and drink when he is thirsty.
one should not eat until his stomach is filled, but 3 ounces less than that.
Exactly.
Well, you always notice it when it's too late. Right? All right, so stuffing ourselves is a problem. So Rambam spoke also as a doctor, and that was his advice. Go ahead. He probably gets it from the Talmud. Go ahead.
And drink one third and leave over one third.
Right, that seems like the Talmud and the Rambam seem to disagree a bit. Rambam says you can fill up most of it, but the Talmud actually says leave a bunch of it. A third of it should be empty. Go ahead.
Leave your stomach empty one third.
All right, so that's how Rashi understood the passage. All right, interesting, the drinking idea, it's a famous dieting idea, right? Drink a lot of fluids or something and then fill yourself up on that. Sorry? Feel more full. Chavetz Chaim, continue. The Chavetz Chaim, you know, lived about 100 years ago, a great pietist, wrote the Mishnah Berurah. He writes there, go ahead.
Only eat what is good and healthy for healing, not what you want at that time. The message, Shua, Isaiah Horowitz, warned only to eat in order to make oneself healthy and ready to worship, and with that, every suda is a suda of a minute.
It's interesting, right? That usually we say, like, as a mourner, I can't go to a meal unless it's a mitzvah meal. So theoretically, I should be able to go to Rabbi Goldberg's bris, you know, because the custom is not to go to bris, it's outside the house, but theoretically I should be able to go to a mitzvah meal. So I can go to a siyum, for instance. If I finish a tractate, I can make a party and I can have a siyum. So he says every meal could be a mitzvah meal if you're only eating what you need to live and do mitzvahs. But notice you're living in order to. Sorry?
You only eat one third.
Well, all right. Let's continue. All right, now go ahead.
Physical exercise, Rambam, Guide to the Perplexed.
Okay. Now this comes up in a conversation. We're going to read in a minute that Rav Kook wrote that it's great. The young chalutzim, the Zionists, they're supporting their body and it's wonderful and doing exercise. And the Ger Rebbe said, "Oh, stupid people! These non-religious people, they're building their bodies. They don't do anything for their souls." So he says, "What do you mean? What about the Rambam and the guys perplexed?" Continue.
"But there are many things which are useful according to some, but not according to others. Those who engage in actions, exercise to keep their health, as playing ball or wrestling or making paper."
I don't know. Go ahead. Go ahead.
"Or will be for fools, laughter. And for the wise, it is not frivolous."
For fools think it's frivolous. They say, "Oh, what are they doing? They're just wrestling." But for those who are wise, they'll say, "No, they're improving their bodies." So the Rambam seems to support that. So the Ger Rebbe said, "But we don't read the Guides of Perplex. We don't like that book. You know, the Guides of Perplex is controversial, and Hasidic people and many people throughout the ages did not like that book. But anyway, that was how Rabbi Rav Kook supported himself. Rav Kook's student, Rav Charlap, whose relatives I know, they supported the position of Rav Kook that exercise is important based on the passage from Shabbat 92a. Esther, would you finish?
"Prophecy descends only on the strong, wise, humble, and wealthy."
Right? If you want to be a prophet, you have to be wealthy, because otherwise you get bribed and things like that. You have to be wise and humble. Okay, we know that. And also strong, implying that physical exercise may be important.
What was that? Was that?
Right. Some take it metaphorically.
Is that physical strength?
Right.
Or
right.
Spiritual strength.
Right. Sometimes when the thugs come after the prophet and they say, you know, "We don't like what you've been saying recently," you know, so he has to be strong. You know? So. Anyway, we don't have time to read this entire passage, but let me just sort of read some excerpts and you can sort of peruse it as I'm reading. Orot Hatchia, one of Rav Kook's, Rav Kook, you know, was the first Ashkenazic chief rabbi of Israel. He died before the state came to being, but he was really the inspiration for the whole religious Zionist movement, of which although I'm in America, I consider myself a part of. And anyone who you know who's, let's say, a rabbi or something from Israel, who's in the religious Zionist camp, they spend a lot of time reading Rav Kook. It's a very, now is his 75th anniversary of his death, believe it or not, and he still have more influence than you can believe. People study his writings all day long. So he wrote these things in the middle of the night. He'd be writing very fanciful things, and the old line community, the Hasidic community and the Misnagdic, the anti-Hasidic community, they made fun of him, they poured scorn on him, because a lot of his ideas were very modern, although he was very, very, very traditional. Brusen in his practice, he looked very traditional. He, long beard, long coat, but he was, had some very radical ideas. So let's take a look at this. I'm just going to peruse it. I'll read a few sentences. Great as our physical demand, we need a healthy body. We dealt much in soulfulness. We forgot the holiness of the body. In all the years of exile, we forgot the holiness of the body. We neglected physical health and strength. We forgot that we have a holy flesh, no less than a holy spirit. A radical notion, almost sounds what? Christian. We turn from active living, etc., etc. Our return, which he means tshuva to God and tshuva to the land of Israel, will succeed only if it will be, with all its splendid spirituality, also a physical return. We don't just have to return to God spiritually, also physically. Produces healthy blood, healthy flesh, mighty, solid bodies, fiery spirit, right? Like the Zionists of his day, he's imagining the return of the Maccabee types, the Bar Kokhba types, the warrior type, David types, who were not only spiritual, but physical as well. The exercise that the Jewish youths of the land of Israel engage in to strengthen their bodies in order for the purpose to be powerful sons to the nation enhances the spiritual prowess of the exalted righteous who engage in mystical unifications of divine names to increase the extenuation of divine light in the world. You see, we're sitting here, we're trying to get light, this supernal light, we're mystics, but we're supported and strengthened by those who are out there exercising. Now, some of their exercising they do on Shabbos, they do it. So, some are very upset about it. He's very excited about these physical types. David made a name. David performed justice and righteousness. Yoav ben Tzruiah was over the army. Avner was punished only because he made sport of the blood of youth. Avner was a great general. In the days of David, they had many warriors as a warrior nation. And there's a whole chapter. There was this warrior and the other warrior, and this guy killed 300 people, and the other one killed 20. And these were the great warriors. And Avner was a great general, and he was punished because they would have fight matches to the death, like duels and things, and people would die. But the fact that they practiced to be warriors, they're not criticized for that. Or if you use sport to strengthen their physical ability, and the spirits of the sake of the divine strength at large, this holy work raises the Shekhinah, just as it raises through songs and praises uttered by David, king of Israel, in the book of Psalms. So he claims that doing exercise is like reading Tehillim. And the Haredim, the ultra-Orthodox community, got a hold of this writing, and they in their newspapers, and according to the book here, they ripped him to shreds, they made fun of him, and they threw unmentionable things at him, and they really threw a lot of scorn at him for this type of statement that reading Tehillim is equal to doing exercise.
He wrote a whole book on it called Kol Shofar.
Right, that's right. Very good. So, in any event, Rav Kook, I suppose, one of the greatest advocates, maybe since the Rambam, of physical exercise and the like. So we have a mysterious mitzvah. The question of the exact source and root of this mitzvah may be something we could pinpoint to what my father imagined as you should guard your soul very, very much, meaning to protect your life and your health. Could be that the verse has various meanings, that it has not one meaning but several meanings, spiritual health and also physical health and other meanings. And it could be that this is not the true meaning of that verse, but that this concept can be found elsewhere in the notion of building a roof, a fence, not putting blood in our home, living by the Torah, God demands from ourselves if we don't guard our health. So there could be many other sources for it. Could be a rabbinic idea to watch our health. As we said, it could also be included in the very, very notion of not murdering, that we value life and we value the preservation of life. The notion of smoking, we saw a development over the ages. And I think today it's fairly undisputed. Anybody I could imagine, including Rav Ryan Greenblatt and others, that one should not smoke, and there's no question about it. And as far as overeating, I think it's one of the big problems in America, one of the big problems of our affluent you know, community in which we live. We don't have any starvation problems and things like that. And even poor communities in America, right? Even the poor people have problems with too much eating in America. That's the kind of affluence we have. But
too much eating or not enough exercise?
Both. Yeah. Too much McDonald's. They're eating the wrong thing. They pointed out that the cheapest foods in America are the ones that are really going to kill you, right? And then how much is a tomato, and a good tomato that tastes like something, right? Right. And how much is an orange that tastes like something? Anyway. So, anyway, then there's this notion that perhaps in a different world, in the world in which Jews lived on their land and they had to fight wars and things like that, the value of preserving our life and being strong and building our bodies was and is continuing today to be more prominent, and that there are different times at which different mitzvahs are emphasized more. And perhaps we live in an era in which simple physical exercise and living healthy in a more natural way, because you know, you're working hard on the farm all day, it can't be taken for granted. So this mitzvah becomes more prominent in our day, A, because of Zionist enterprise and other enterprises that are taking place in the physical land of Israel, and it becomes more prominent because we live a very sedentary life in which we have to actually, and a life of plenty, which we actually have to think about these things in order not to overeat and under-exercise, etc. So there surely is a value of guarding our lives. The notion whether guarding your life, whether if there is a verse that says guard your life, don't put blood in your home, whether that would go as far as to say that therefore is a mitzvah to exercise, I think you can see that that's not 100% clear if that is the case. Although clearly many of the great authorities recommended, you know, healthy dose of exercise, etc. And obviously anything the doctors would recommend would fall in this general category of guarding our health. Any questions?
Maybe the idea of enhancing your body and exercising would be not considered the right thing to do, or been revoked the Greek idea of your body.
Very good, very good. Esther's suggesting that perhaps Jews in general do not talk too much about preserving the body and building up the body and things like that, because it's a Greek notion, so we just to be sort of the Jewish contrarian, we under our culture underemphasizes that. Could be that could be.
But doesn't, you know, when it says that keeping kosher will help you be closer to God by the way you eat, mm-hmm. doesn't that suggest a connection between your body and being close to God?
That, right, Rav Kook would, that would be support to Rav Kook, that he says that we're supposed to have holy bodies as well. Right. Some theories of kashrut say that it's not that when you eat kosher foods that it's a spiritual uplift for your body, but it actually somehow physically is better for you in some, whether it's a mystical way or some kind, some sort of way. Some suggested that, and maybe we can combine the two, that there was an idea that what you eat could have a spiritual effect on your physical a spiritual effect on your physical body, that right. There's something spiritual about your physical. Yes. Yes?
Which culture is it that says your body is a temple?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. We have an idea that the human being is like a Beit HaMikdash too. There is some idea of that, but that's a good question. Good question.
Your body.
We should mention, I don't know enough about it offhand, but the students of disciples of Bar Kokhba, they say that they were, you know, magnificent warriors. You know, they could stand on a horse and shoot, you know, chop somebody's head off. And, you know, I forgot all the different things the rabbis say about or someone else says, about the warriors of Bar Kokhba. So, you know, there was a period like that. So it's also a reaction to that. It's like, that didn't get us too far. Let's leave that alone. Yeah. Right. So the Jew began to develop an image of the, what's the word? Eingebegene Yid, the Yid that's sort of bent over and very humble, and he looks down on the floor and he's skinny and we sort of, you know, it sort of maybe hope for some sympathy as the brute walked by. you know, that I don't even bother with him. He's not even worth beating up, you know. He's so that's part of the Jewish self-image. Although that was not universal. There were Western European Jews, German Jews, Dutch Jews, other Jews, and they were living very, Italian Jews and Greek Jews, they were living with great pride, you know, throughout the ages. But any other comments?
All right. Killed
the old vision. Interesting. Interesting.
With the seventh-day war. The sixth-day war. The sixth-day war and the seventh-day they rested. I think they put that notion of the little bitty.
Right. Unfortunately, today we're portrayed in the media as Goliath. Yeah. Right.
I think it's split, though. I think the stereotype used in
anti-Semitic literature.
Just in entertainment, is the geeky Jew, the American right. Jew. But they just completely ignored Israel.
I've met Israelis who said, Israeli Jews are handsome and attractive, and American Jews, you know, scrawny. And I've met Israelis who feel that. Well, on that note, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. Not necessarily. Thank you.